I'm Dr. Phil Menard, and you are listening to Cyber Runners.
Hey, Cyber Runners. Today we have Dr. Philip Menard as our guest. Dr. Menard is here to talk about an incredible scholarship opportunity here at UTSA called the Scholarship for Service Program. So welcome, Dr. Menard. A piece of advice that students often get is to have an elevator pitch ready. For your introduction, can you provide your example of an effective 15 to 30 second elevator pitch?
Sure. My name is Phil Menard. I'm an associate professor in the Information Systems and Cybersecurity Department at UTSA. My research focuses on the human factors related to cybersecurity and information privacy, leveraging my technical, statistical, and analytical experience. I also study the socio-political implications of fake news, including national security implications.
I would love to spend some time on your experience prior to UTSA and understand the path that led you to cybersecurity.
Sure. So I graduated in 2006 with my undergraduate degree, Bachelor of Science in Computer Information Systems from Nicholls State University in Thibodaux, Louisiana, which is right near where I grew up in Morgan City, Louisiana. And I was always interested in computers growing up. I had a natural knack for working with them, figuring out problems with them. And so I figured that was a good path for me to take when I was in college. And so that's what I ended up getting my degree in. I worked in industry for 5 years. But in the back of my mind, I always knew that I wanted to further my education with a doctorate degree. And so that was always my goal, was to end up at a university in academia, researching, teaching students. And so that led me to the path of entering the PhD program at Mississippi State University in Business Information Systems. And going into that program, I didn't really have cybersecurity as a focus at the time. I was more of a jack of all trades type of IT person. I was a one-person IT department at the high school that I was working at as their IT person prior to going into my PhD program. And so as part of my interview, the professor that was interviewing me, Dr. Merrill Worthington, who ended up being my dissertation chair, he asked me, "Are you interested in security?" And I said, "Yes, I am," because I was just interested in all of it, right? So I didn't necessarily have security as a focus, but it was something that I was noticing I was having to deal with more and more in my job as an IT specialist. Security touched everything that I did, including network administration, which was the primary focus of my job. We had a one-to-one laptop program where all teachers and students had laptops, and so the Wi-Fi network was particularly important. If the internet went down, I heard about it very quickly. People were not happy when there was no internet. And of course, the security implications that go along with that too made it a part of my job that I had to constantly be reading up on and teaching myself. And so really, when I look back on it, I can see how security was really there all along, but it took that question from Dr. Worthington asking me if I was interested in security to kind of turn on the light bulb and say, yeah, I actually am interested in that. And so that's really what set me on the path of cybersecurity. And then specifically on the Scholarship for Service program, which we're going to talk about later today, that was something else that just sort of fell into my lap while I was at Mississippi State, because I didn't even know about the program until I was completed with my first year in the program. It was just a conversation with Dr. Worthington, and he said, "Well, you know, we have this program that's administered through the computer science department that they pay for your schooling, and you have to work for the government afterwards. But," he said, "I think you can still work for a university as part of that." And I said, "Oh, well, I need to find out more about that." And so the Scholarship for Service program then kicked in for the last 2 years of my PhD program, which was instrumental. And we're going to talk about that later. But what was also nice about it was that it opened up a whole other world of what you can do with cybersecurity in government, not just in academia, which I was tunnel visioned on as part of the PhD program. But it really kind of broadened my worldview in terms of cybersecurity as well.
So as we were talking about earlier, the Scholarship for Service program, could you give us an overview of what that entails?
Sure. So the Scholarship for Service program is a program administered by the National Science Foundation, or NSF. And the program is designed to bolster the cybersecurity workforce in the federal government. So the program is designed where they pay for your tuition and fees up to 3 years. But then on top of that, you also receive an annual stipend. So you get paid to go to school. And the reason that's there is because they want you to focus on your schooling. They don't want you to have to worry about finding jobs outside of school because they understand how important it is for you to be able to support yourself, right? And so they provide that stipend to help with that. The stipend for undergraduate students is currently $27,000 a year. For graduate students, it's $37,000 a year, which they actually just increased this past year. So they're constantly evaluating the program and adjusting those annual stipends based on cost of living and things like that. But on top of that, another important piece of the program is that there's an annual job fair that happens every January in Washington, D.C., and basically all of the important federal agencies, as well as the ones that maybe you've never even heard of. So, of course, you've got people like CIA, FBI, NSA are all there, but then all the other executive branch positions are there as well. And they're there to basically talk about the internship and full-time employment opportunities that are available to students. And this job fair is exclusive to SFS students. So really the only participants that are there are the other SFS students that are in programs similar to ours across the country. We're just one of about 100 schools now that participate in the program. And so the job fair, your travel is all paid for, and you get the unique opportunity to have face-to-face time with these agencies in order to find employment, because that's the other important piece of the program is that you do have to find employment with a federal executive branch when you graduate. Another important piece is that during the summers while you're in the program is you need to have an internship with one of these places as well, which that sounds like a bit of a burden at first. You know, I've got to search for jobs. I've got to make sure my resume is up to date. But really, it's a benefit to you because those internships give you a foot in the door and it makes it that much easier to find employment once you finish your degree.
So what piqued your interest in leading the scholarship for a service program at UTSA? Why did you want to lead the program?
So when I started at UTSA in 2019, Dr. Nicole Beebe had just become department chair, and she was one of the co-PIs on the program at the time. But with her increased obligations being department chair, you get pulled in a lot of different directions. She quickly realized that she needed to offload some of the things that she had been doing before. And so I think that she knew that I was a previous recipient of the Scholarship for Service program. And so she approached me and said, hey, you know, I need to step away from my role in this program, but would you be willing to take my place in doing this? And I jumped at the opportunity because, like I mentioned before, the Scholarship for Service program was really instrumental for me in finishing my own PhD program. It supported me for the final 2 years of my PhD program. Because of the stipend, it greatly increased my annual income, because as a research assistant, I was not being paid very much, and the scholarship really helped me with that as well. And I wanted to give back to the program, and so this was a great way for me to do that. And it, again, this is one of those opportunities that just fell in my lap. Dr. Beebe approached me, and I immediately said, yes, whatever I need to do to be involved, just let me know. And so I officially became part of the co-PI team in January of 2020.
So what are the key qualifications of students to be considered for the scholarship?
So the main qualification is that they need to be majoring in a cybersecurity-oriented program. So the advantage of UTSA is that we have several of those, right? We have the BBA in cybersecurity through the Information Systems and Cybersecurity Department. We also have the new applied cyber analytics degree from that department as well. And then on the computer science side, we have they have a cybersecurity concentration. They have a cyber operations track that you can focus on. We also have students from electrical engineering that are also in the program too. They're focused on cybersecurity. So as long as you have cybersecurity in your degree plan and you can demonstrate that and you can list that out for the program to look at and say, yes, this is a cybersecurity student, that's the first qualification. The next qualification is that typically, we look for students to be in the program for at least a year and a half, and the program maxes out at 3 years. So if you're an incoming freshman coming into UTSA, you're not eligible for the program just yet because the scholarship is going to run out before you can finish your four-year degree. So really, you need to have at least 1 year under your belt in the program at UTSA before you can apply. But you also can't apply like when you only have a year left in the program. The program doesn't want to see just somebody in the program for a year and then they're already graduating and entering the workforce, because one of the key pieces of the program is that you owe a year of employment for every year that you're on the scholarship. So if you're only on the scholarship for a year and then you only are employed by the federal government for a year and you could potentially leave to go to private industry, they don't want to see that. They want to see you in the in a federal position longer than that. So really the sweet spot is somewhere between like a year and a half left in your schooling and 3 years left in your schooling. Outside of that, we also want to see people that have good communication skills, that are hardworking, that are collaborative. If you're involved in student organizations, that always looks good on an application because that demonstrates that you're involved in extracurricular activities, but you also know how to communicate with others, work with others on projects. Doing outside research is also helpful too, because that helps distinguish you from the big pile of applicants when you go to apply for a job. If you imagine a recruiter on the federal side looking at everybody that's applying places, what can make you stand out from the pack? Usually a really interesting research project can help with that. So if you're involved in outside research, that's also really helpful. And then really kind of on top of all of that, maybe the most important piece is that you need to be interested in federal work in the first place. Because if you just think working for the federal government is like, oh, that seems kind of cool, but I'd really rather work for Exxon or Amazon or Google, then the scholarship is probably not the scholarship for you. This is not your normal scholarship where, you know, you can just kind of play around and kind of think about federal work and then maybe back out of it later. You really need to be serious about pursuing it, and not to say that it's 100% what you want to do, but you need to be very committed to wanting to do that before applying for the scholarship. Because one of the things with the scholarship, a stipulation, is that not only do you have to work for an applicable agency for the same number of years you were in the program, but if you start the program and then you back out of the program, you owe that money back to the program. So that would be your tuition and fees, also your stipend. You would have to owe that back as well. So that becomes a big financial burden if you decide at a later date, well, I don't know that I want to work for the federal government. Well, you need to really make that decision now before you apply, before you get into the program. So we really also want to see in your personal statement that you send with your application some kind of notion that you have a federal sort of mindset, that you want to work for the government, you're motivated to work for the government and give back to the country in that way. Because if you can demonstrate that, then that means that you're a good fit for the program beyond all of the other stuff. You're a cybersecurity student, you're hardworking, you have good communication skills. That's all fine, but you also need to be committed to seeing the scholarship through and finding that applicable job when you're done. The other important qualifications for the program are that you have to be either a U.S. citizen or a permanent resident alien. You also have to be able to obtain a security clearance. So if there's anything in your background that would maybe make that difficult, then maybe this isn't a great fit. And also, we hold biweekly meetings during the fall and spring semesters. So every other Friday is when we're holding them right now. We meet in person, and during these meetings, we talk about relevant issues to the students, things like resumes and interview prep. And then we also, importantly, we invite recruiters to come in from different agencies and talk directly to the students. So we have people coming in from FBI, CIA, NSA, NASA. We just had a couple of weeks ago. So even outside of the ones that you typically think of for cybersecurity, we'll bring them in and talk about opportunities for internships or for full-time employment with the students. So it's important for students to be able to commit to attending those biweekly meetings as well.
So what are some qualities that you and the selection committee hope to see in potential recipients? Something like, you know, like character or other types of qualities?
So one of the qualities that we list on our website directly is GPA, of course. You have to have a 3.0 GPA as an undergrad or a 3.2 GPA as a graduate student. So you have to have at least good academic standing and have some strong record there. Along with that, I will say that we don't just look at your overall GPA. We also focus on your major GPA. So if your overall GPA is lagging a little bit, but you're doing awesome in your major GPA, that actually holds more weight for us because you're doing well, or maybe even exceptionally well, in the classes that really matter for your major. And maybe it's just the other classes in your program, like you just had an issue with focus or you didn't find them as interesting as your major classes, we are somewhat understanding of your GPA being a little bit lower for that compared to your major GPA. So if your major GPA is especially strong and you're borderline on your overall GPA, then that's okay. We can look past the overall GPA in a certain regard if your major GPA is really strong. We also look for really strong communication skills. Part of the application is going to be a personal statement. So you're going to have to demonstrate your written skills as part of that. With that, talk about your passions. Talk about how passionate you are about cybersecurity and how passionate you are about working for the federal government, giving back to a public position in that way through cybersecurity. If you can effectively talk about those in your personal statement, that's going to mean a lot to us when we're evaluating applications, because that's going to indicate to us that you're really serious about not just cybersecurity, but also about where you want to work when you finish your degree. If you're passionate about both of those things, those make you an ideal candidate for the program. Another thing would be how involved you are in extracurricular activities. If all you do is go to class and you have an excellent GPA, that's not going to be enough to make you stand out in the application process. We would really rather take somebody that has, say, a 3.7 GPA but is involved in lots of extracurricular activities than someone who has a perfect 4.0 GPA but they have nothing else to show for it beyond just what they do in the classroom. So you have to be a little bit more well-rounded. You have to be involved in things, and it doesn't have to be things just associated with cybersecurity, although we like to see that because we have a number of student organizations related to cybersecurity here at UTSA. Pick any number of those to get involved in and be active in them, and that helps. But if you're involved in other student organizations as well, that is also a good indicator of your ability to reach out beyond just what you need to do in the classroom, your ability to work with others and collaborate with others. If you have leadership positions in these types of organizations, that also helps too, because that shows strong leadership skills, which is important. Also, cyber competitions. If you're involved in any of the number of cyber competitions that we have here at UTSA, that also helps because, again, sort of related to extracurricular activities, if you're involved in cyber competitions, that gives you an extra thing that you can put on your resume to demonstrate skills. Because when you're going to find a job, you're going to have to demonstrate that you have certain skills that are applicable to the job that you're applying for. And so if you're involved in cyber competitions, not only can you put those skills on your resume, but it also gives you active practice in using those skills in an environment that is going to look somewhat similar to what you're going to have to deal with in the real world once you have your actual job when you graduate.
So although the scholarship deadline has passed for 2024, can you walk us through the application process and materials needed that would need to be submitted for next year's application cycle?
Sure. So our typical cycle is that we have an information session toward mid to late January where we can invite people to come to a meeting and hear about the program. We typically record this meeting as well and host it on our UTSA SFS website. So even if you can't make it to the meeting, you can always go back and view the meeting, which you can view the meeting that we had this past January on our website now, which this year we actually had it the first week of February. But it's usually around that timeline that we have the information session, and then shortly after that, we open up the Scholarship Hub portal for you to be able to submit your materials. And usually that's open for about a month. The deadline for our scholarship just passed last week. It was mid-March this time. And it's usually around that time of year that all your materials are due. And what we look for in your application packet, you need to have a resume. So make sure your resume is clean and tightened up. It needs to be 1 to 2 pages, no more than that. We also look for a personal statement, like I mentioned before, talking about your passions for cybersecurity, your passion for working for the government, why you think the scholarship program would be beneficial to you, and how you would be able to contribute back to the program as well. You also need some letters of recommendation. You need at least 2 letters of recommendation. So if you're thinking about the program, you might want to start reaching out to your professors now to ask for those letters, because we don't want you to just talk to a professor that you barely know and ask them to write a letter for you, right? This needs to be a professor that you've had a class with before, that maybe you've interacted with, you've done well in a class, so they can actually speak to your skills related to the area that they were teaching. But start reaching out for those as soon as you can. with the two letters that we require, we like to see at least one of them be from a professor that you've had in the past for your coursework. But your letters can also come from previous employers, too. That also bears weight with us. If you have a manager that is able to speak directly to your work ethic and your character, then that would be really helpful. But we also want to make sure that you have at least some academic representation in your letters as well. So having at least one professor is really helpful for that.
So for students who were awarded the scholarship, what are the financial benefits and even internship opportunities that they could get?
So as I mentioned before, your tuition and fees are fully covered by the scholarship. Plus, you receive the annual stipend of $27,000 per year if you're an undergrad, $37,000 per year if you're a graduate student. But then beyond that, you also receive professional development funds that you can use for buying certificate preparation materials, taking a certificate exam, buying equipment. You can buy a laptop with these funds. The funds also cover your travel to the job fair in January. The amount varies from year to year, but it usually averages around $6,000 per year. So it's quite a bit of money that you can tap into for extra educational things that you might need. Books, technology. For students that do research, they've used their professional development funds to buy specialized equipment that helps facilitate their research. We have one student in particular who does a lot of electrical-oriented research, low-level hardware-based cybersecurity type of research, and he buys equipment related to that, and we approve it because he has a legitimate need for that. So as long as you can justify that this equipment that you're buying or the certifications that you're pursuing are beneficial to your future employment or they're beneficial to your completion of your educational program, then we'll probably approve it. If you have other conferences that you want to attend besides just the job fair, we can cover that with your professional development fees as well. We've had students that have attended the RSA conference, the WESIS conference, other practitioner conferences, DEF CON, Black Hat, things like that. You can use your professional development funds to attend those as well. As far as the internship programs go, you as a student are responsible for finding your own summer internship. This isn't like a program where you're just handed an internship or you're handed a job when you finish. You actually have to put in the work to apply for places and pursue these internships or full-time employment positions. But the benefit is that by having an internship over the summer, that's going to make it easier for you to find your full-time employment once you finish your program. And the summer internship is a requirement of the program, but it usually lasts about 10 weeks during the summertime. And so if you're a student in the SFS program, you're probably not going to be taking summer classes. So you have the time to go ahead and have those internships. Usually the internships are elsewhere. You know, they could be most likely in DC, or if they're in one of the national labs like Sandia or Idaho, you'll have to relocate for those. One of the advantages that students in our program have, because UTSA is in San Antonio and we have so many government employers here, sometimes students can find summer internships here in San Antonio and they don't even have to move. So for some students, that's a good thing. Some students, they actually want to leave for their summer internships. They look at that as an exciting opportunity. We're a little bit unique in that we can offer that opportunity, whether you want to try to stay local to San Antonio or go elsewhere, whether it's DC or elsewhere in the country. You can pursue internships in either way. Most likely, you're going to have to relocate, but we do have some local opportunities too.
So can you share some success stories of recent UTSA scholarship recipients and the government roles they've gone into?
Sure. So we have a number of different backgrounds among our SFS student base. They're not all technical cybersecurity. We have some that are more policy-oriented, some that are even more technical than the typical technical students. So we really run the gamut from technical to non-technical. And the types of internships and full-time employment that they've been able to achieve because of their different backgrounds have also run the gamut. We've had a number of students recently that have been employed by Air Force Civilian Services, which kind of like my last answer, that's a local position. So the students didn't even have to move to go for those positions. We've had students find employment with FBI, CISA, We recently had a student accept an interesting internship opportunity through UTSA, but sponsored by Idaho National Labs. We have a few other students that are either currently employed by Sandia National Labs or are pursuing internships with Sandia National Labs. Lawrence Livermore National Lab, we had a student have an internship there last year. So we've really had lots of varied experiences among our students. It's not like we send all of our students just to FBI or just to Department of Homeland Security. They really do spread their wings and pursue lots of interesting opportunities available to them through the federal government. Because that's one of the things that I want to highlight about the program is that even though you're restricted to finding employment with only a certain set of people when you graduate or finding internships with a certain set of employers, really, it's not that limiting. If you look at the federal executive branch organizational chart, there's lots and lots of opportunities within that, and not just very technical cybersecurity jobs. We have one student in particular that I'm thinking of. She's a policy-oriented student, and she's been able to find some really interesting policy-oriented cyber jobs that maybe are a little bit under the radar. They're not the ones that people typically think of right off the top of their head, but she's been able to find employers that satisfy that niche that she's interested in. And so there's lots and lots of opportunities within the program. You just have to put in the work to be able to search for them, find them, and then also talk to us as the co-PIs to help you with that search. If you have a particular area that you're interested in, just let us know and we'll help you target the particular people that are offering jobs in those areas.
So how does the program assist students in finding employment to fulfill their service commitment after graduation?
So one of the primary things that we try to provide in our program are the biweekly meetings that I mentioned earlier, where we invite recruiters in to speak directly with our students about opportunities that are available. That's probably one of the best things that we do for students in assisting them in finding these positions, because we also give them broad information like going to USA Jobs and finding positions there. But by talking directly to the recruiters, they're able to get some inside information as far as what are they looking for a particular position. Are there certain skills or characteristics that they're looking for in an applicant? Do they have a separate application portal, or do they have a different timeline on when you need to submit and when you'll find out an answer of whether you got an internship or not? Sometimes that really matters. We just had an agency speak with us earlier this semester that they have a really long lead time to be able to obtain an internship. So if you're applying right now for a summer internship with that particular agency, that's not going to happen. You're applying for next summer already, right? So being able to inform students about those timelines specific to agencies is also really important. Plus, we also give students one-on-one guidance on what does their resume look like. We have all of our resumes for our students submitted through our Canvas portal. That's another thing that we use to help students is we have our own Canvas site for the SFS program that our students are able to submit all of their documentation to us. And by doing that, we can give them targeted advice. We also have regular check-ins with them on where have you applied? Who have you heard back from? What looks promising right now? So we're able to keep tabs on our students and be able to see, okay, you know, this student has two or three things that look promising. They seem okay. But this other student, maybe they've been striking out a lot. You know, they've applied a lot of places, but they just haven't got any traction anywhere. We can spend more time with that student to maybe dig into why it is that they're not receiving traction. Is it something about the way that they're interviewing? Is it something on their resume? Is it something else in their background? Is it their coursework? We can give them guidance on how to improve those things on a one-on-one basis by having that information and checking in with them often. Again, that's another benefit of the biweekly meeting is that it allows us the opportunity to meet with them on a regular basis and just to be in the same place as your students helps. We've talked to other students at other programs that don't have a similar type of structure as ours, and the students say, we feel really disconnected from our program because of that. Like they only maybe see their PIs once or twice a year and then maybe at the job fair, right? But because we have more regular interaction with our students, we have a little bit more of a personal touch to be able to help them in a targeted way that actually increases their chances of finding something.
So what advantage does working for the government offer, whether they be short-term or long-term?
Sure. So I would say in the short term for our program, the key benefit is that you fulfill your scholarship. You don't have to pay the money back. That's the number one benefit. But beyond that, you know, we've seen recently in the last year or two, the private tech industry has been very volatile in terms of jobs, right? I mean, we've had big tech companies have big layoffs. The government is more stable than that. You're not going to see the big waves of, we're going to employ thousands of people right now, but then we lay off thousands and thousands of people later. The government is more steady. And even though positions in the government are beholden to funding available that's made available through Congress or through legislation, the cybersecurity area is going to be well-funded for the foreseeable future because it ties directly into national security and the protection of our citizens. And so because of that, it's a very stable area of the government to find work in. So job security, I would say, is one of the big benefits of working for the government. Another government benefit is work-life balance. If you're working for a private company, there's typically going to be a lot more hours that you're going to have to put in during the week. If you work for the government, they have a strict amount that you can work per week. And depending on the agency, they might even have required time off that you have to take periodically. You know, they basically force you to say, take a day off, rest. And basically every agency that we bring into our biweekly meetings, they all speak similarly about that, about the work-life balance that's baked into the system because of that. So if work-life balance is really important to you, then the government work might be a good fit for you as well. Another benefit about government work is that you have access to interesting research projects or interesting global problems that you just wouldn't have access to if you're working for a private company. So if you're really interested in tackling big issues, solving big problems, then government work is probably a good fit for you as well because of the classified nature of some of the things that you have to work on and having to obtain a security clearance. You're just not going to have access to those same things in private industry that you would in government. So that would be another thing that I say is a really big benefit of working for the government. Also, the satisfaction of giving back to your country. That's something that we look for in your personal statement. That's something that you just can't get from working for a private company. So that if giving back is important to you, then working for the government, I think, is also a good fit. There's also other things that are, you know, maybe seem not as big as the things that I just talked about, but like free TSA pre-check. You get that with working for the government, right? I can say, as somebody who pays for TSA pre-check, it's super nice being able to just breeze through any airport and get to my gate very quickly and not have to deal with those security lines. So that's really nice. Also, it's really competitive to move into industry from your degree, whether it's an undergraduate or graduate degree. You need to have some level of experience getting into private industry. Having government experience on your resume can help with that. Let's say you work for the government, you fulfill your scholarship obligation, and you want to transition into private industry. Having experience in the government is going to look really, really good on your resume. And again, because you have access to solving big problems and researching things that other people wouldn't have access to, that's going to give you a leg up. If you're looking to move laterally or move into private industry, that's going to give you an advantage there as well. Plus, with government, you have the opportunity to also bolster your leadership skills. There's going to be opportunities for promotion and moving into leadership roles within the government that maybe you wouldn't have as direct a path towards with private industry. I would say the final benefit of working for the government, too, is having access to continued education opportunities. Oftentimes, the agencies or departments that you work for, based on what you work on, they may identify that, hey, you would be a good person to go back to school for more expertise in this area, and they'll pay for that. So let's say you're an undergraduate moving through the SFS program, you get employed by the federal government, and you want to pursue your master's degree. There's a good chance that who you're working for will pay for your master's degree because they see something in you and they see that you could use some extra expertise in that area. And so they'll fund your schooling in that way. So I know I've listed several benefits and I could just keep going on and on, but that's just sort of the tip of the iceberg of pursuing government work versus pursuing work in the private industry.
So how is UTSA helping promote and raise awareness of the scholarship opportunity among students?
So outside of our informational meeting that we hold each year, we also record it and we host it on our program's website at UTSA. And so our website is probably the primary way that we promote the program. It's available to you to go to anytime you want. It's hosted through the College of Sciences Computer Science Department's website, so you can find it there. If you Google UTSA NSF SFS, it's one of the first hits that you'll see on there. That's where you can find all of the information about the program in general, and also how we administer our program and what we look for in applicants. Otherwise, we also distribute information through our department email list. So because I'm a co-PI under the Information Systems and Cybersecurity Department, I can forward all of our information to our department. But our other two co-PIs, Dr. Raj Bapana and Dr. Greg White, they're in the Computer Science Department. So they can distribute their information to that department as well to make sure that we're getting as wide of a distribution network as we can across our different cybersecurity programs. Again, that's a benefit of UTSA that we have multiple programs in cybersecurity, but one of the challenges is that we have to make sure that we're speaking to all of those programs when we promote the program. But we have good distribution networks for that now as well. Also, we have a good word of mouth among students that are in the program, talking to their friends and colleagues within other programs or classmates of theirs, people that they work with in student organizations. They also do a really good job of promoting the program among their peers. And we've had a number of students apply to the program based on talking one-on-one with one of our prior students about it. So that, to me, I think is one of the strengths of our program, because we build such good bonds through our biweekly meetings and checking in with our students often, that they sort of have just an innate drive to seek out other students and try to bring them into the program as well. And so we've had a lot of success with our current students branching out, talking about the program to others and really promoting it and talking about the benefits that they've received from it personally. That's really been helpful in getting really strong applications over the last couple of years.
So can you discuss any new initiatives or changes coming for the NSF SFS program in the next few years?
So the program is constantly growing. I mentioned earlier that we're up to about 100 schools that participate nationally. Just a couple of years ago, we were still closer to 90 schools. And each year at the job fair, one of the things that they do is they announce the new schools that have been added to the program. And every year, it's at least 2, 3, 4 schools that are added on. So broadening the access to the program, I think, is a big push that they're making right now, making it available through more schools, not just through schools like ours that have had the program for a long time, but maybe opening up the opportunities in other states where maybe they don't have a school that participates in the program. That's one of the initiatives that's always ongoing with SFS. One of the initiatives that's relatively new is that beyond just cybersecurity, purely cybersecurity students that they're seeking out to be part of the SFS program, they've broadened that call out a little bit to say, we still want cybersecurity students, we still want that focus, but they've broadened it to include students that are also pursuing things like AI and machine learning, data analytics, bioinformatics, because all of these areas are starting to cross-section with cybersecurity more and more, and there's a need for that in the federal workforce. So if you're somebody that is really interested in AI and machine learning, but you're also interested in cybersecurity, this program could still be a good fit for you. Even though you're not purely a cybersecurity student, you still have enough cybersecurity in your background to be able to apply to the program and be able to have employment in the federal workforce and a cyber position that still leverages your other interests in whatever those might be, whether it's analytics or bioinformatics, AI, what have you. They've broadened the call a little bit to be more inclusive to those types of students. And I think it's mostly because we are starting to see more cross-sectionality of cybersecurity blending in with other disciplines. And so they're mindful of that, and they're starting to incorporate that into their call for students a little bit more now as well.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Menard, for being here with us.
Thank you so much for having me, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk about the program.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Cyber Runners with Dr. Phil Menard. Please follow us on social media and stay tuned for future episodes.